All right, Craig's here. Chris is not here, however, as his internet is out currently because they had a nasty storm that decided to roll through at the last minute. So I'm joined this week by my buddy Mike. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, there he is. There's possibility that Chris joins us halfway through the podcast, so if he just shows up and starts running his mouth like usual, well, nobody will notice.
Until such time, you'll be treated with deep philosophical discussions from Jay Johnson.
No, on the we don't do that voice here. We're not NPR. I don't want our listeners to fall asleep. Like, I'm very loud. Chris is very loud, and that's on purpose.
Oh, come on. I can't be the counterpoint.
No. We can't have people falling asleep. That voice puts people to sleep so quick.
Sorry, Jay, I can't help myself.
It's like listening to Ben Stein talk. You know who Ben Stein is?
Bueller.
Yeah, that Ben
Stein.
Has
anyone seen Bueller?
Yep.
Bueller. No, I'm glad to be here, man. Thanks for inviting me, Jay.
Yep, welcome back. You've done a few of these with me, so you got a little practice in.
Yay.
I would have invited you, Bruce, the beer bandit, but it's probably past your bedtime. Next time, buddy. Just hit me up, man. So I don't know if you can see it or not, Mike, but right before we started this thing, I posted a Larry Elmore piece of art in the general channel for our Discord that is six of the greatest, I say greatest in quotations, fantasy heroes of all time. Standing, you've got, I'm assuming that it's Robin Hood, King Arthur. The next one is Elric, Driss-Duarden, Conan, and
Flagnad.
Yeah, Fladnag. What's his name? My brain's blanking on him.
Gandalf?
Yes, Gandalf. Well, the problem is I have so many white bearded wizards in lore. There's Fizban.
It's Elminster.
Elminster. There's so many of them. I can't remember which one's which. And it's not perfectly clear.
It is a beautiful piece of art.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I just love that, they brought all of those characters together, and there's so many more he could have added, but just in general, I love Larry Elmore's art.
It's so weird seeing Drizzt with all of these other guys.
Yeah, but within D&D lore, there's nobody more famous. There just isn't. And D&D is massive these days. I love that
Conan is wiping the blood off of his axe.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very Conan of him. Since we're starting off talking about art, and a couple of the things we're going to talk about tonight, me and you have already sort of talked about over the weekend, but we haven't done it on air. So we're going to talk about the Monster Manual that's coming out for 5.5.
Is that the one that has the beholder on the cover of it?
Well, let me see. There's the two different pieces of art. There's the primary art, and then there's the variant art. So the main piece of art, and apparently they're just they released the player's handbook like 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago. Then last week they released the DMG, and then this week they released the art for the Monster Manual. And it's this giant ass beholder, and I mean that is a big goddamn beholder. That's at least huge sized.
Let's say Minsk is what, 7 foot tall?
No, Minsk is he's like 6'3", 6'4" probably. But
he's as tall as it's as big as three Minsks.
Top to bottom, this thing is big enough. It actually could probably chomp down on an elephant. It's a big ass beholder, and there's Minsk and Boo standing there on top of a hill over a horde of mountains, and there's some lady casting magic behind him.
And you know what she's standing directly in front of?
That central
anti-magic aura.
Yeah, that central eye that is wide open. I love the I won't even say I love the piece of art. It's it's okay, but that's just they didn't think about that.
I like it better than the original 5th edition Monster Manual art.
Can't argue there.
Yeah,
I like the 3rd edition Monster Manual art. It doesn't actually have a piece of art on it. It's just sort of a it's design. It's just design.
It's a creepy looking book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a terrible piece of art. It's just, you know, it's CG. No. It doesn't really do anything for me. And I Waples would be cussing up a fucking storm at me right now if he was here about that.
Have you seen the back cover of it?
I have. Yes, I have, because it's in the same piece that I'm looking at.
It's got a looks like a Modron, a brain dog. There's a Nothic hanging out over there. I hadn't seen that before.
With the owlbear cool. in the back. Yep.
Yeah, the purple owlbear.
Yeah, I kind of like that piece of art.
That's freaking cool.
Yeah, there's a gnoll up front. You can just look
that
these
a green hag.
You can look this stuff up. I just Googled Monster Manual 5.5 and then just went to images, and it was first thing that popped up. The third thing that popped up in that search, though, is the variant art for the Monster Manual. And I already have multiple friends who are going to hate me when I say this. I don't like the piece of art.
I'm not one of those friends.
The variant piece of art is a very uninspiring looking Mind Flayer holding. Is that a tadpole, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it's a tadpole. It looks just like the Mind Flayer models that were in Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes, very much so. Which is fair. Mind Flayers look like Mind Flayers. I'm not expecting them to, you know, go crazy with it, but you look at the player's handbook variant art, you look at the DM guide player's art. Those are two unique artist takes. They don't look like general Dungeons and Dragons art. And this looks like something that should have just been on the primary cover of the Monster Manual.
Yeah, it stands out, and not in a good way.
Yeah, like, I want my pieces of art. If you're doing a variant cover, man, hire an artist that does wacky shit. If they had done this entire cover as just black and white ink, that would have been fantastic.
I got one for you. The Monster Manual in the style of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I probably would have hated it, but I can't make the argument that I'm making, at least, if they had done that.
Yeah.
Because that would have stood out. It's different. Like the Volo's Guide that they had done with the variant cover. That one stood out. It was very different from anything from things we've seen.
So, that was a beautiful Mind Flayer.
Yeah, it was just black and silver. It wasn't just a painting. I say painting in the loosest terms.
People don't paint today, you know that.
Yes, they do. The person that did the Player's Handbook variant cover is a painter, because that's how they made that cover.
Yeah, okay, someone actually put some real effort into it.
Yeah, the Larry Elmore piece I just posted, he painted that, although I don't know what year he made that. That could have been from 20 years ago.
Oh, it had to have been a while ago.
I mean, Larry Elmore, he still paints.
I would love to own some of his art.
Yeah, and he doesn't sell much of it, and it's really freaking expensive. I've looked into it before.
because of course you have.
Of course I have. Now, that's his paintings. You can get some of the sketchwork stuff that he's done reasonably. Yeah. I say reasonably priced in quotations. You're still paying a few hundred bucks.
And you can get prints of the stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and those aren't bad. Like, you can get framed prints probably for $100 or less.
Yeah, and you'd never be able to tell the difference.
No, not really. Yeah. But yeah, I've really kind of enjoyed the variant covers up until this one. Like the DM guide one, we didn't talk about it much on here, but they did Lolth, and it was a different piece of art. It wasn't my favorite piece, but it was unique.
Yeah, I like the framing that they had of Lolth just kind of gently wrapping her spider legs around this person.
Yep. Let's see. I'm trying to pull that piece of art up. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, I wish I'd have to look into who actually did that piece of art. I don't want to talk too much about it since we did go over it. Wow. I'm actually looking. I was looking to find that piece of art, and on the same website we were just looking at the other ones, they have a bunch of looks inside the DM's guide. And there's actually some.
Ooh.
Yeah, we are not going to go over this tonight, but man, there's actually some really good art inside that book.
That's good to hear.
It's all CG, but it's really nice and actually stands out. So that's good to know.
I didn't realize that they were starting to give previews of the inside of the books yet. That's cool.
Yep. Yeah, let's be fair. I am one. I don't see that they're saying the stuff. I'll drop a link to it in the podcast chat just in case people want to look at it. But yeah, they don't say that it's the interior, but I've never seen any of these pieces of art. So it probably is. And if I read the entire article, it probably actually states that. I'm not going to do that while we're trying to record this damn thing.
Because you're a professional.
No, far from it. I half-assed this thing completely.
I don't know what you're talking about. You're a consummate professional.
Yeah. We'll find out about this weekend. We'll see how good I am. So I get to run a new game this weekend for you and several of our other players that I've never run before. That's very different from anything I've run before, but I'm very, very confident that I can pull it off. And
I'm looking forward to it. What is it?
So the system is the Valiant Universe role-playing game by Catalyst Games. And for anyone who's not familiar with Valiant Universe, that is basically the Valiant comic books. They apparently released this book, I think it's from like 2015 or somewhere in that time period, 2014.
Okay.
And I've had this book for several years, and I've looked through it a few times, but you know, with our ability to play games in general being once every...
You mean in it?
Yeah.
Inability?
Yeah, once every 2 weeks, if we're lucky... finding time to actually run this game hadn't happened. But we have the one game that's currently going on every other week that Drew's running. And then you're going to be running Ravenloft here probably in a month. We'll say a month.
Yeah, we'll say start of next month, and I'm stoked about it. It's going to be fun killing you guys.
Yeah, I talked ad nauseum last podcast about making characters for that thing. So... at least until that kicks off, I've got a couple of weeks I can run this thing for sure. And then anytime somebody cancels or we can't run a game, this is a game that is so simple, I can just run it. I don't have to have anything.
Really?
Fun. First off, when I was younger, a lot of my D&D shit was made up on the fly. And I still have that ability. Like I can spend a couple hours at most thinking about something, not writing down a single damn note, and still run stuff.
I think that's a good ability for a DM to have.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't like doing that, especially if I'm running a campaign or something like that.
Mm.
I'm not going to be truly running a campaign with this, but I am going to be running games like that because a lot of times I just want to get together, run something, you guys play whatever the hell we're doing. And it's comic books. Comic books are the easiest storylines to run. X supervillain stole this thing. You have to retrieve it. X supervillain kidnapped this individual who has information. You have to find him to find the supervillain. Like, there's so many simple ways to just pull shit together to run it. And
I'm intrigued.
And the system is ridiculously simple. Basically, it does use all of the core D&D dice, D4s up to D20s. A character has four stats. You have might, intellect, charisma, and an action die.
How does that work?
I will get to that. If you are doing a quote unquote skill check, and say it's a strength based one, you're trying to push down a door, you'd roll your might. If you're trying to figure out how to complete a complex puzzle, roll intellect. You're trying to talk somebody into something, roll charisma. If it's an action sequence that's combat, you roll your action die.
Okay.
That's it. It's going to be action die plus a D, or no, no, action die plus your power and any modifiers, and whoever the target is will roll the same thing effectively. Higher roll wins.
Oh, really?
It's really, really easy to run as far as the system goes. Now, I may have messed up the numbers, but that's effectively it is. If you're doing a skill check, it's, you know, say you're making a strength based one, you roll your might die, you roll a D12, you add those together, plus whatever modifiers against a D20.
Just the D20.
Yeah, because it has like a, in D&D, you just have a set DC. You know, you have a set challenge number. It might be a 10, it might be 12, 15, whatever. In this game, it's just a variation of whatever you roll on that D20. If I roll a 15 on the D20, okay, your DC is 15.
Oh, so there's never going to be a set DC for stuff. It's constantly in flux.
You're basically just trying to beat the D20 roll.
Huh. Is that D20 roll made public to the player?
So the group actually gets to decide this when we start to play. When you do that, at least with those checks, not the post checks per se, but with the skill checks that roll the D20, you could just roll it yourself as the player. You roll the D12, you roll your might score, and you roll the D20. You just roll three dice.
Huh.
You can. I mean, if you want, as the game master, I can also roll it.
Yeah, yeah. But there's plenty of options as to how to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, like the game as well is a very heavy narrative based system. So I sort of started realizing this heavily when I was reading about the powers and how they work. So say you have a power, say you've got, let's think Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. All right.
Okay.
So if you have the power of, you can control fire. When you're creating your character, you have to sort of figure out, how does your fire work? In Johnny Storm's case, he sets himself on fire and he can throw blast of fire.
Flame on.
Yeah, but there's no rules in here for how that works. You will set a number. You know, you'll get a die, basically, that's associated with it that you can set when you're creating the character. A D4, D6, D8, 10, etc. And you'd roll that die whenever you do things with that. And I believe you roll the action die also to add those up. And that's how you determine your success with it. The damage, I believe, will be set as to how much damage it can do. But
so if I'm Master Blaster Payne and my game is fire, it doesn't necessarily say firebolt, shoot a stream of thing. I determine the way that firepower expands or funk. Really?
Yeah. So if you want to say you go and you want to try to hit four people with fire, then I might add modifiers to that. Yeah, because you're trying something that's more difficult. So it might, you know, you might not be able to hit them all. This game also has one other interesting thing. You start with a luck score from 1 to 12, and that luck score can be any number you as the player pick, or you can just roll it randomly. And so say you have a luck of 7. Luck score of 7.
Okay.
And you roll an intellect check to solve a puzzle, and on your intellect die, you roll a 7. It's an automatic success. That's how you crit. You just roll the number. You roll the number equal to your luck score.
Oh, well, Well, that's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
It makes the whole luck mechanic actually do something.
It makes it based on luck.
Yeah. that's probably the one flaw I had with Dungeon Crawl Classics was the luck score and the lucky roll.
Mm.
I mean, usually it seems like whatever you got as your lucky roll was the thing you were shittiest at.
Yeah, as well, your luck tends to go down in that game because you just you burn through it and then you run out of luck.
Yeah, and hope that the GM gives you some more luck points.
Well, yeah. Sometimes if you complete the adventure, you get luck. If you're a rogue or a halfling, I think you get luck back at like one point per game session or something.
Yeah, it's not much.
Yeah, I mean, that game isn't... DCC is great, but it's intended to be very difficult. This game, the Valiant system, is not designed to be particularly difficult. It's supposed to be easy to run, and it is narrative-based. So even if you get into a fight and all of your characters lose, I'm still running a comic book here. It's literally like running a comic book. So if you get your asses beat in a fight, you're still probably not going to die. You're going to end up in some sort of a shitty situation. You know, oh, you've been captured by the villain. You're now locked up in their prison. Or hey, maybe you just lost this fight. They get to take the thing they were trying to steal. Like, there's a million ways to run it because it's just like running a comic book.
You underestimated Joker's boner. Now you will pay.
Yeah, it seems like a neat little game. I mean, when I was reading the character creation rules, I think I said it was like 9 pages or 12 pages. Like, there's so very little to the character creation. Now, mind you can level up. You can gain new powers as you go forth. A lot of how your powers are going to work is supposed to be through role playing. You know, you might be starting out your brand new character, you throw firebolts. Well, you know, as you play forth, experience, no experience, whatever, you as a player might decide that you want to have something unique with your power that you just role play that happens that can affect the game. You know, like I was saying, throwing it at 4 people, you've never done that before. It's a role play thing. You're trying to learn how to expand your powers.
I like it. Power to the people.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to run this with our playgroup, because I know that we have a couple of people who are, I won't say hardcore power gamers by any means, but you know, they still sort of lean in that direction.
I think another small hurdle for our group is most of us have been so heavily focused in games that are heavy rules-based.
Dungeons and Dragons 5e. Yeah.
Yeah. This sounds like it's more freeform than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got some set rules, but it's not hard to go outside of those. There are no rules for how a lot of shit works. And I'm perfectly okay with that. You know, second edition, when I started, there weren't a lot of rules for things, and I ran it just fine. Movement in this game, there is no movement.
Oh.
It doesn't even exist. It's when your turn comes up, do you need to, you know, where do you want to be?
Oh.
Does it make sense? If you are a super hero who doesn't have super speed, then you have to sort of just, you know, can I reach the villain or is he too far away? You know, if you've got flight, then you could probably say reasonably, okay, I fly up to the villain and punch him.
Otherwise, make a logical argument to your DM and hope yes. He sees your point of view.
Yes, a lot of this game is make a logical argument about it.
Okay. Count me in, sir.
Yep, and I've been wanting to try a lot more of these narrative-based games. We talked about the Dune one for a while. I was having a hard time wrapping my head around that. And
like Brindlewood Bay?
And Brindlewood Bay. That one, that's just an interesting one. I really do want to run that damn thing, but man, I was struggling trying to get... Like, I actually went online and watched some people play through a game session just trying to, you know...
Oh, wow.
Trying to beat it into my brain, because these are not the style of games I normally run. I'm so used to running with hard set rules.
Yeah.
But this one sort of hits that middle point where there does have enough hard set rules... and then enough narrative based stuff that I can wing this one.
You can make it work.
Yeah, I can force this one in. I can take that round peg and force it into that square hole.
That poor peg.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never be the same again.
So hopefully I get to run this weekend. It seems like I'm going to. Everything seems to be going fine now. Hopefully somebody doesn't catch COVID or some other bullshit before then.
You shut your whore mouth, sir.
Yeah.
Don't you dare curse me with that. Not again.
Yeah, nobody won. Yeah, the bird flu. Somebody actually did die from the bird flu this past week, I think.
Oh, crap, really?
Yeah. Yep. So
It's real. It's the bird flu. It's here.
Yep. Everybody ready for pandemic round two?
Round two. Fight.
Yeah. Nobody's staying home. If there's a bird flu out there that they try to do the same pandemic shit, no, I'm still coming over. We're still role playing, damn it.
Hell yeah. That's what I like about you, sir.
Yep. I'm hardcore about the gaming.
Let's go.
Yep. So last week, and I apologize for anyone who's listening if I'm the one broaching all the topics. Because with Chris not being here, I literally asked you to join in like what, an hour ago.
Yeah. So I am Mike McNotopics.
Yes, Mike McNotopics. But I can't run this thing completely by myself. At the very least, I have to have somebody to bounce stupid ideas off of.
Otherwise, you'd probably end up going crazy, and what fun would that be?
Yeah, I would probably just sit here and start reading through modules or something. And
or you could get into some deep philosophy with James.
No.
Oh, okay.
Never talking philosophy with you on your front porch again. Never. We're done with that. Should have known better.
Sorry, Jay.
So last week I brought it up. I'll talk somewhat about this today. I was speaking to Waples about a couple of modules that I had that I wanted to kind of go over. And they're old first edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons tournament modules. They are official competition adventure for the RPGA, which was the role.
I had always wondered how that would even function in a game that is not meant for tournaments.
So I have a lot of different modules. These are specifically RPGA modules. A lot of the modules have a whole lot of story based behind them. They kind of run story based. These have a deep story behind them, but the modules don't necessarily focus as much on that. They actually have, it's a lot more like sets of challenges to overcome and survive. Okay. And the farther,
but the story is there if the players discover it.
It's there, and you are doing the story. It starts you straight out with the story, and you're already in it, but it's not like most of the other modules in that regard. And I know it's hard to explain without sitting here and kind of pointing out the differences. But the ones I have, they're called To Find a King, and the second one is The Bane of Llewellyn. And the reason I even bring these up is they are modules C4 and C5. They are meant to be played back to back. So it's a continuation of the module. The first module is four short modules, basically, and you would run one of those short modules per setting. So effectively, it's eight games.
Okay.
And the second book is four of them as well, and you would pick those up after running these. And it is designed for characters levels 4 to 7 on the first one. And the second one is an adventure for 6 to 10 characters, levels 4 to 7. So I am assuming that this first one is also for 6 to 10 characters. Just think about running a table with 10 characters, like 10 players, man.
I really don't want to.
That's because you've only ever run 5e.
I mean, no, I've run Dungeon Crawl Classics before.
Yeah.
You don't have that many players, but you've got 20, double that.
You got 15, 18 characters. Yeah.
It gets stupid really quick.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What's the lethality and the kill rate on this? Like, how quick am I going to see characters start dropping like flies?
Probably pretty goddamn quick.
In that case, then it's not that bad.
Yeah. That's actually what I was going to talk about very, very specifically was the first encounter. The very first encounter is it's a creek crossing in Loring's Wood. And I'm going to read, I'll read briefly from this. I'll read what the players would hear. The forest path you have been following turns toward a creek that is about 15 feet wide. Here, a huge tree trunk spans the water, its ends buried in the brush and trees on each side. The path continues on the other side, winding further into Loring's Wood, and the paving stones of an old road can be seen there. So the setting, straight out of the gates, is, okay, well, we are standing here on this one side of the creek. We have to get to the other side of the creek. There's a tree. You as a player, what are you probably going to do?
Well, my mind immediately realizes that vampires can't cross running water, and there's running water right in front of me. So if I cross this running water, I'm obviously opening myself up to a vampire attack, which is something you don't want to do. The second thing you don't want to do is get into a war against Sicilians when death is on the line.
Yes. Neither of those things. But perhaps the vampire is on the same side as you, so crossing the creek would be the right move.
Okay. Ooh, that's a conundrum.
Yeah.
So all I see is a tree, a creek, and a path on the other side. That's not much. Can I look in the tree? Can I look up at the tree and the branches?
I mean, it's laying on its side. It's for you to cross it.
Okay. Just like that. I've already forgotten the position of the tree. It's already on its side.
Yep. Here, a huge tree trunk spans the water.
Oh, okay. It's a bridge.
Yes.
Trolls live under bridges.
So, in general, the idea is for players to just simply walk across it.
Yeah.
With what I've read, that's what the vast majority of players, especially 5th edition players, would do. In this case, everybody, all 5e players, are just going to simply walk across it. They're not going to think twice about it. They're just going to try to go to the road.
It's funneling you across this thing with a path.
Yeah, and what it is three treants who are evil, who want to kill you.
What?
So there's
Where are the other two treants?
They're hiding. They're the trees nearby.
Oh my god.
And the one laying down is also a treant.
I know. He's just laying there doing his part.
Yeah. and it says in here, okay, well, I'll read what it says. Long ago, the
tree... Why the hell didn't I think of this?
Nobody would have thought of this. Long ago, the treants were warped by evil magic. Now evil themselves, they intend to ambush the party as it crosses the creek. If the party crosses here, the treant on the far bank automatically gains a surprise attack at +4 to hit against one character who crosses the bridge. The one on the party side then suddenly attacks the rear of the party the same way. Simultaneously, the bridge rises, dumping all the characters on it into the creek, which is 4 feet deep. They are intelligent and try to make their ambush as complete as possible. Thus, an unwary party might find its front and back members surprised and the central ones thrown in the water. And if I read further in here, you can't easily climb out because it's like muck and muddy on the banks.
It's 4 feet deep.
Yeah. And these things have, basically, they've got 40 hit points. They deal two attacks of 3d6 damage each.
Well, you just killed the entire party.
They have an armor class of 0, which the equivalent of that is about an 18 armor class.
Yeah.
So you're looking at almost certainly characters just dying right out of the gate. The one saving grace might be if you have a wizard with fireball, because tree they do have vulnerability to fire.
Still though, that's the treants are just going to kill the wizard.
Maybe, yeah. If the wizard's in the back, almost certainly, because wizards in a fourth level wizard in this edition, in first edition, 4, 8, 12 might have, if you're goddamn lucky, a fourth level wizard's going to have 20 hit points.
And he's in the back. You know what else is in the back? Another treant.
Yeah. Players learn very early to always put your wizards in the middle. But yeah, if he's in the rear, he's just toast. This is not this is just a brutal ass encounter right out of the gates.
That's just unfair. But it's a tournament. You want someone to win.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I haven't read through the entirety of it. I have no doubt that more of the encounters are the same way. Like the next page, you have to fight some wyverns. They're brutal. Like they are not fun.
I'm gonna need you to put your superhero game on hold so we can run through a bunch of these, because these sound really fun. Because I'm the masochist. I like challenges like this.
I could run this. It wouldn't be that hard. Everybody would have to make multiple characters. Page 8. There's a black dragon.
8 pages in. Here, kids, have a black dragon.
I'm going to be honest, reading his stats, the treants are worse.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. This is an old black dragon. So he's been around, he's seen some shit, but his armor class is 3, which is like a 16 AC. He has 48 hit points. His claws deal 1 to 4, 1 to 4, and then his acid breath, which is... the breath weapon's way worse. Never mind.
That's where they get you at. Yeah, he's easier to hit, but he's got this breath weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that the breath weapon will just fucking murder people, so.
Damn.
So that's the first scenario out of 8 of them. I do want to run this. I would fucking love to run this, but it's so hard to get everybody to, you know, sit down and do this kind of stuff.
I'm there, buddy. I am absolutely there.
I know you are. You're in on pretty much anything I'm willing to run or anything anybody's willing to run.
I'm easy, I guess.
No, you're like me. You just like role-playing games. I don't give a shit what people are running. I don't like 5e. I don't.
I know.
But if people are running 5e, yeah, I'm going to play. I'm in. Sold.
So you were. I heard you talking the other day about having a difficult time finding characters that you really wanted to play in the Strahd game.
Yes.
You should play a Tabaxi.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, I hate Tabaxis with a fucking passion.
Something you've never done.
And I am absolutely being the grumpy old man on this podcast. I don't like Tabaxis. There's a lot of race choices in D&D 5e that I don't like. I don't like Dragonborn.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, I don't like Dragonborn. They're not unique. They're not creative. There's nothing cool about them. I like Draconians.
Yeah.
Because Draconians are from Dragonlance and actually have an entire history behind them, a massive lore set behind them.
You know, Dragonborns, on the other hand, don't really have that.
Dragonborns didn't even exist in Forgotten Realms. You know, like, I don't have a single novel sitting on my shelf, and I got a lot of fucking novels, and none of them have a Dragonborn in them.
I think they're from 4th edition, aren't they?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
And we know how 4th edition was.
Yeah. It started this dark slide.
Yep. God damn, I wish Waples was on here.
I know, me too, just to hear how salty he would be.
Yeah, he would be salting against my salt.
Much salt in the room.
Yeah, well, we are the Grumpy Dungeon Masters podcast after all. And he is sort of the balancing factor for me. Yeah. You just sort of feed into me.
That's fair. I bounce off of you. You and I usually see eye to eye on a lot of stuff.
Yep. Damn, I was going somewhere with all of this. I don't remember. Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
I completely derailed you on that one.
I do have an idea for the Ravenloft game, though, if my character dies. I may just make a character for if that one dies ahead of time, but I'll have access to all of the Ravenloft races, classes, backgrounds, and stuff. Yeah. So at that point, I might pull something from there because that's stuff I've never actually messed with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Once you guys do finally get abducted, possibilities open up.
Yeah. Yeah, after that character dies, I really expect him to.
Okay, I'll be sure to target you first.
Sure. I'm going to be putting that character in situations.
Oh, you're going to be trying me, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, we'll see about that.
Well, no, it's not testing the DM, it's just okay. the character is going to get into situations.
Yeah. It's unavoidable. Really,
and Ravenloft, well, it's going to try to put you into situations, as we know from the last time I played.
Oh yes,
you know, like, oh, it's just a windmill. What's the worst that could happen?
The windmill. I love the windmill. Mm-hmm. It's a pity you know about the windmill, though. You're going to have to keep his hush hush.
I'm not going to. I will have no say so on the direction the party takes. Like I've already told you, my intention is to take a step back and not be the party leader. I really hate that I'm the only one who does take the party leader role. There's me and Drew, and both of us tend to be party leaders no matter which game we're playing, because the rest of our players don't step up and do that.
Yeah, and that's fair. You do get put in that role quite frequently. I'm trying to do a little bit better in Drew's game about speaking up and making decisions, but the nature of my character is that she shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, as you are
Kenku.
Yeah, as you are a Kenku, it makes it very, very difficult for you to be the party leader. We have a person who can't speak, that only talks in people's minds. So Chris definitely can't. We have a goblin. That's not going to happen.
We're the worst party that ever did party.
And truthfully, it should be the paladin, but Amanda's still very new to role playing, so it's kind of hard for her.
She did pretty good this last session, though, when we were going up against that alien, for lack of a better word.
I forgot. I really do wish Chris was here because I haven't told him about that.
He's just going to have to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, he won't, but I might talk to him about it later.
It's still a fun conversation.
Yeah. We're running, it is a very sort of traditional Dungeons & Dragons 5e game. But our game master loves to have fun with shit. So we're in this house. This wizard was dead. He had summoned something up that had killed him. We didn't know what it was. Everybody's thoughts are, oh, it's some sort of devil or demon or something from some alternate plane.
Yeah, because we found his body in a summoning circle, and his clothes were singed and burned, and he had a hole bored through his brain.
Yep, so we're like, okay, well, let's try to find this thing. And when it first shows up, he gives the description, of which I can't begin to give. But
he said the creature you see has metallic silvery teeth and spines jutting up along the spine of its back and a long tail that ends in a barb. And everyone's like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Xenomorph.
Is this a xenomorph? And the answer is yes. Yes, it was in fact a xenomorph from the Alien movie. And he had gone online, he had found stats for like 18 different types of xenomorphs.
Of course he did.
So we, as Dungeons & Dragons characters, got to fight one of these goddamn things. And
it was a challenge.
Yeah, we survived it relatively easily, but man, it did some fucking damage. Well, the acid did the damage.
Yes. I mean, Amanda, the paladin, she goes in there and she does the right thing. She's going to smite the snot out of it. And it just bleeds all over.
Yeah,
and
she crit smited right out of the gate. So that was that was good for us. It took a lot of damage, and then it dealt.
Oh yeah. Left her with one.
Well, I think
hit
she had like 6 hit points left or something after she attacked it.
Yeah.
Like that's not what you want.
No. It was fun encounter. Yeah. Hats off to Drew for that one. It was a fun encounter.
Yes, we quite enjoyed it. I've never gotten to fight against a xenomorph in that game before.
And I don't think I want to do it again.
Back in the 90s, I played in an Aliens role-playing game. I think I was a teenager at the time. I'm pretty sure the guy made up the rules for the game, but it was we were Space Marines. We were hunting aliens, and the game was fun as hell.
That's all that really matters at the end.
Exactly. I mean, I don't care if people make up the rules. Yeah, if somebody wants to literally just make up a rule set on the fly, I give no shits as long as everyone's having fun and it's relatively consistent.
Only thing that matters is that people are having fun.
Yep. And that people aren't cheating.
Well, yeah, that's a problem nobody wants to have.
Because that ruins other people's fun.
Absolutely.
So there were two other things that I wanted to briefly talk about on here, and I've already talked to a couple of people about this one, and me and you, I think, briefly talked about it offline. The DC...
Was it the moment that Kenku actually got to have a real conversation with somebody?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
No, but hey, you could tell that story. You're here.
That's pretty much the extent of the story. But, so we have the one player who's mute and speaks to everyone telepathically. And 90% of the time, it's just a one-way telepathic communication. He's just going to lock eyes with you and say, "Hey, how you doing, Bobby Devine?" and relay what he has to say. And you can't really talk back privately with him. You can verbally communicate, but you can't think with him like that. But a certain amount of times a day, he can choose a couple targets to receive two-way Nextel communications with privately. And he did that with my Kenku, and the moment he did, without missing a beat, oh my God, it's so good to finally actually be able to talk to somebody. Do you know how hard it is? Blah, 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 all these people, they can't talk to me. I can't talk to them. It's so frustrating. I have to constantly go all the time. It's just, God.
Yep.
It was fun. I think somebody actually had to talk me down.
Yeah, no, I loved that interaction because I've never thought about that. Yeah, because Kenkus can only mimic things they've heard. It doesn't mean that their brains only mimic things they've heard. So there's no, if you have a psychic connection, there's no reason you can't just have a full bore conversation like a normal person.
And that Kenku is probably going to blast you with all of its thought.
You need to, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah,
good
you
time.
Need to find a like a telepathy spell or something. Something that gives you the ability to talk telepathically.
Screw flying.
Yeah.
I just want to talk.
Now you have a goal for that character.
Yep, she's a Kenku bard that just wants to talk
and
to
not
people.
Just sing everybody else's songs.
Yes! I have my own songs. Hear them.
Beautiful. All right, so the other thing on the docket is the DC 20 role-playing game. Yeah. And for anyone who is not familiar with this is a Kickstarter that's out right now. It's got 21 days left to go from the time of recording. So by the point we release this, it'll still have almost 3 weeks. And it is currently at $1.2 million pledged. The goal was 20,000. So they blew that number right the hell out of the water. And I've sat down and watched a video with the creator talking about what is the system and what makes it different. From my understanding, and a lot of the information on this system I do not know, so I could absolutely be off on a couple of details.
Yeah.
As well, this is also in playtest, so things I say could potentially be changed down the road. But they've definitely got a lot of support, a lot of backing behind this thing. And the thing that really, really seems to set it apart from 5e is the action economy. And it doesn't even do a really new take on action economy. because in Dungeons and Dragons, you get one basic action, you get a movement action, you get a you get a bonus action. And sorry, I started receiving messages and got very distracted. So you get an
action. Sorry, that was my fault.
I know. You get an action, you get a bonus action, you get a movement action, and then on another person's turn, you can take a reaction. So you get four actions per round, assuming that you have the means to trigger all of those.
Very similar to Pathfinder.
Pathfinder, you just get three actions on your turn, and if you have the and if you have the means to trigger a reaction, you get that. This game steps out of that and just gives you four actions. Doesn't care if you do four reactions. Doesn't care if you do four move actions, four attack actions, four of whatever. There's probably limitations, I would imagine, on spells, but I could be wrong there. You know,
may not be.
Yeah, I don't know that in depth on it. But you can take four actions. Break it up however you want. I personally love that. That's great. That is a good thing. Four reactions I find interesting, because if you you could potentially build a character that doesn't actually take actions. They only do reactions.
That would be an interesting take on things.
From everything I've read and heard about this thing, it is supposed to have massive character customization. And that's the crux of all of 5e. Like, that's what kills that game, because there's very little character customization. Pathfinder 2e, massive amounts of character customization, but it's a little too number crunchy, in my opinion. So
yeah, Pathfinder can really bog down really super quick.
Yeah. Now, if this thing is effectively D&D 5e with massive amounts of character customization, then I'm interested. Because I like
it. I'm okay with that. Yeah.
I know I said earlier I hate 5e, but I hate 5e because there's no character customization.
Yeah, it's not just that you hate the mechanics of the game. Mechanically, I think it's perfectly acceptable. It's fine. It's great.
Yes.
It's just, if you've played a fighter, you've played all the fighters.
Yeah.
The only class that has any real options are the wizards, and most people aren't going to play most of those options.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you got all the archetypes. I don't want to go much into this, obviously, because I talk about it every fucking week. You got all the archetypes, but once you've played a class, you've played a class. There's not enough variance in there. So
And it's going to get even more watered down with the next one, because race don't matter. Sorry, I'm going to get off my path so far.
Yeah, none of us are a fan of that. I wasn't, Waples wasn't, you're not. Like, I don't know anyone who is. And that is one of the problems with DC 20. It does that.
Really?
Yes, it does that. If you want to, I specifically heard them say earlier, if you want to play a dwelf, you can play a dwelf.
The hell is a dwelf?
That's a dwarf elf. A
dwarf elf?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that?
I don't know. If you want to play an orkling, you can play an orkling. Those were the actual phrases I heard mentioned. So I don't like that per se, but it's not an absolute killer for me for a system, because I can set limitations as a game master.
So I could play a noblin, a gnome goblin.
You mean a knob goblin? Yes.
Yeah, I was just gonna say noblin, but yeah, that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but still, no. Something like that I could. That's not. Boop.
What about a half loam?
How about a half axi?
Half axi.
Since you're all about tabaxis, it's just a furry halfling, like a furrier halfling with ears.
It's the halfling that grows fur.
Yep. Oh man, this game, furries are gonna love this game.
He doesn't have any fur on his feet though.
Yeah. No fur on the feet. He has bald feet.
Yeah.
So it seems like an interesting idea. I want to find out more about it. Am I going to back the Am I going to back the Kickstarter? Or no. Is there anything at all remotely about the setting that I give a shit about? No, because it seems very much like another Dungeons and Dragons clone.
Another medieval fantasy role-playing game.
Yeah, and I'm about done with those. There's some grimdark ones out there that I have interest in, because, you know, they are still fantasy settings, but they take it to a different way. But this seems just another high heroic fantasy.
Yeah.
But the system might be cool enough to actually use. If it is, I can always run it in whatever setting I want for the most part.
I think that's just where we're getting to. You're just going to, settings be damned, you're buying it for the system.
Yeah. And if I ever bought DC 20, that would be why I'm buying it.
Yeah. So DCC is very much that way. Run it in any dang setting you want, because it don't give a crap. It just wants to kill you.
Yeah. DCC has a number of settings, though.
Yeah.
They've got Lonkmar. They've got Mutants. They've got Mutants Crawl Classic.
Yeah, X Crawl Classics.
Yeah, like they have a number of different settings. Then they, God, what was the one that I, the Purple Planet. I wanted to kickstart that one, but never did.
I have no doubt that you'll buy it when it actually hits market.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Next year, I plan on buying a few games.
When does Gloomhaven come out?
It's still in the playtest phase. So, you know, who knows? I'm guessing probably late next year.
Okay.
Now, Sky Raiders of Abraxas, though, I might actually have access to it by Christmas. Because they are done with the books. They're done putting the books together. Now they probably still have to get them, you know, physically put together, shipped out and everything, but they're done writing them.
That's good. They've been working on it and making progress.
Yeah. Now, all of that said, that is literally just another 5e game, but I had to back that one just because of who was behind it.
Yeah. And that's a good reason as any.
Yeah. Yeah. I will buy things if I like the creators of it. I do that all the time. It's the reason I have plans to get the variant cover for the Player's Handbook that's coming out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you see somebody's doing something good,
yeah,
you want to support them. Freaking support them. That's the only way they can become successful.
Absolutely. Buy art from your friends, people. There's one other game coming out that a friend of mine told me about that he seems to be way more interested in. I'm really interested in this one, but probably still won't back it. Because, you know, not at the moment. It is called Void Runner's Codex.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, look into this one. So it's being put out by Morus, Morrus, who everybody who listens to us would be familiar with, because they are the ones who put out Advanced 5e.
It's good stuff.
Advanced 5e was good stuff. I wish I was able to get the physical copies of it. At some point, I probably will, maybe next year, like I was talking about. But this is their take on a sci-fi setting. So it's going to be advanced 5e sci-fi.
In space.
Yeah. So I know Starfinder 2nd edition is scheduled to come out probably next year. But man, I'd struggle as to which one to jump into. Probably Void Runner Codex.
Oh, Jay. There's a section in the book about setting the tone, and I'm just flipping through it, and it says, perhaps the most important thing you need to establish with a sci-fi horror game is this. It's got horror as a thing you can do, dystopian, apocalyptic, space opera, military space western.
Oh, yeah.
It's encouraging their DMs to get creative and stupid with it, and I love it already.
Yeah, that's what Advanced 5e was a lot about, though. It was giving you a lot of creative stuff in the hopes that you would use it and get creative with it. Like the fact that they added advanced versions of basic spells in that game. Like Advanced 5e had 3 versions of Fireball.
Advanced 5e is what I wanted Wizards to do with this monstrosity that's coming out at the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, they streamlined more of, at least as far as the monsters go, they streamlined a lot of the cool shit out of them.
I'm just going to get angry again.
But you know, it is what it is. But hey, they either did or they are releasing. Maybe we talked about it last week. I don't remember. They're releasing a monster or released a monster that has three reactions in a turn.
Ouch.
And we, I told you guys about this weekend that shock and grasp means you can't take reactions. So
yeah, you break that monster.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck, buddy. Every wizard ever is going to have shocking grasp now.
We're just going to have half the party take silvery barbs, and the other half is going to take shocking grasp.
Or the people that take silvery barbs just take shocking grasp too. You know, everybody in the party has silvery barbs and shocking grasp.
And then we break the DM's will to live.
Yes, have fun running any encounter.
Oh, geez. How did it get to this point?
I'm not even bitching about that. Like, if you go back to the earlier editions, there's broke-ass spells in every system. I mean, so
3.5 was a completely broken system.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
By the end of it, it was just absurdity, the role-playing game.
Yep. Still fun as hell, but there you could do some really broken stuff in that system.
Speaking of absurdity, the role-playing game, and I would say this is off-topic, but I don't think we have a topic. I found a video on YouTube earlier today, and some time ago, you and I spoke about the worst role-playing systems out there.
Oh, yeah.
One of them we brought up was Fatal.
Yeah, you keep bringing that up. You've talked about it a couple times this week.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to end up buying it.
Oh, no.
I know. I found a 34-minute long video of, you know, let's make a character. And the screen cap they have for their video is just roll 452 dice.
What?
So it just sounds like roll table after roll table. I'll send you the video privately.
Uh-huh. And that's...
If you want to subject your listeners to it, then
I mean,
you, fam.
I might watch some of it because that's just me.
And none of it sounds good. It's like playtesting. No, they didn't playtest any of this thing. It's so absurd that I kind of want to play it.
It's unfortunately because we talked about like 10 of them, I think it was.
Yeah,
I don't remember which one is which at this point because that was months ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah,
and none of them were good.
No, every one of them we talked about that were the worst of the worst.
Which is to say, very bad.
Yeah, I hopped on eBay just to see if I could even find Fatal on there and didn't see it. So
really, ooh. So it's going to be one of those good luck finding a copy of it. Somewhere.
Well, yeah, there might be more. I just put in the
PDF.
Word. Yeah, I put in FATAL space RPG. So if I have better information after I look it up, I might be able to find it. Because I looked up several of them last time when we were actually talking about them just to see if they had them for sale or what they go for. Because
they
know me.
Exist. They're out there, man. I had a brain fart.
Yeah, well, it happens. Very briefly, apparently there are videos out now for Dragon Age Origins Sacred Ashes, I think is what it's called.
Okay. You know what else has a video out?
What?
Like Warrior 5 Clans.
Ah, okay. Well, that's not Dragon Age.
No, it's not.
It is related. It is somewhat related to RPGs because there is a MechWarrior RPG.
Oh yeah, this is an RPG podcast.
Yes. Dragon Age Origins though. Yeah, because I've talked about Dragon Age the role-playing game on here before. I don't know much about the new game that's coming out. This is not the role-playing game. This is the video game.
Yeah.
Origins, Dragon Age Origins, probably my favorite role-playing game of all time.
Really? Like
it probably is. It's absolutely in my top two or three, but probably number one. I've played
Could
that,
not get into it.
I played through, that's the first one. That's the original.
Yeah.
I played through that thing 5 times.
Wow.
I never did, there were 6 endings. I only ever got 5 of them.
Well, you have to play through it again.
I've tried. I actually tried a few 6 months back or so. And the controls are not up to snuff.
It hasn't aged well.
No, they're not up to snuff, unfortunately. The second game, a lot of people hated it. I thought it was really good. It played very similarly to the first one. Storyline was kind of meh. The third game was absolute garbage because they made a computer role-playing game and they decided to design it with the PlayStation as the primary focus, which didn't work at all.
And sometimes mapping things to a controller doesn't work well.
Yeah, well, the stuff you could do in the original one, you just couldn't do anymore. Then there was all these, you know, go out and collect every zone that you go in, go out and find these 20 hidden little gems, and then go collect this stuff. It did that bullshit.
Now I'm already getting bored.
Yep. So that game was garbage. I'm hoping this next one, I really, really, really am hoping that they bring it back to what the original one was. But I'm not holding my breath on that. We shall see. There's not really any information out, just a trailer. So,
and that doesn't really tell you anything.
No, it doesn't.
Look at the pretty video.
Yep. So, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a stack of cards here. Or have we gone over?
we're actually over an hour at this point, oddly enough.
Oh, no crap. Wow.
Yeah, we've been at it. I don't know exactly how. Started 8:51. Yeah, we're a little over an hour. So
time really flies.
I know, right? But yeah, we'll wrap it up here.
All right. Sounds good to me, bud.
Thank you for filling in, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hopefully, we weren't too boring this week.
Nah, we're never boring, and I'm happy to help any way I can, even if I have absolutely no topics.
Yep. Well, you had topics. It's just we didn't get to them.
All right. It's okay.
It was that stack of cards.
Next time, stack of cards.
Next time. All right, guys. We're out. Bye, Craig.